In the 1980s, two monumental forces in music were about to collide. They were Music Television, or MTV, and William Broad, also known as Billy Idol.
I was in a punk rock group called Generation X, and we made two albums as Generation X. Then we kind of split in two, and then me and Tony James, the original members, became Gen X for one album. And that's the album that we first worked with Keith Forsey, and we did Dancing With Myself on it. Then I decided to go solo, and I decided as well to come to America. I had an American manager, Bill O'Coin, who managed Kiss. And he had come out of television in the late 60s, but he still had his, you know, fingers in the TV world. And he knew on the cable channels there was going to be this 24-hour music channel, which was going to be MTV. And so he knew this was coming, and he knew I'd be perfect for it. Also, New York, I knew there were other musicians there because of punk rock, the CBGB scene, and I just knew there was millions of musicians living in New York. I knew we'd find somebody if I went there, hook or by a crook kind of thing. And then when I actually got to America, I realized that Dancing With Myself, this song we'd done, was doing really well in this kind of new wave dance chart where all the sort of kids in the clubs were dancing to it, you know, and so I realized I really didn't have to change a thing. I just had to carry on doing what I was doing, you know, because this is the music I decided I want to make. And I got together with Keith Forsey, and we did an EP which had Money Money on it and Dancing With Myself. We put that on it, and it did quite well. But in the meantime, I met Steve Stevens. Bill O'Coin, my manager, knew Steve Stevens. He'd been watching Steve's career. So he got us together, and once I saw what Steve could do, I realized, oh, this guy can do anything. I mean, with this guy, with Steve Stevens, I can do any music I want to do, and he can nail it.
And nail it they did. Rebel Yell.
Hi, I'm Billy Idol. Welcome to Rebel Yell at 40, All Access.
You've abandoned me. Love don't live here anymore. Oh, no. Just a vacancy. Love don't live here anymore. Oh, no. When you lived inside of me, there was nothing I could see that you wouldn't do for me. Trouble seemed so far away, and you left that day. Oh. You've forsaken me. Love don't live here anymore. Just a vacancy. Love don't live here, I'm all. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Love don't live here anymore. Just emptiness and memories of what we had before. Yeah, magic seems so far away. Well, I changed my way. You've abandoned me. Love don't live here anymore. Well, ooh. You've abandoned me, and love don't live here.
broken dream. Sit that day, there you scheme. Wanna come back, babe, but baby was cold. You see, all that glitters can be sold, babe. The star-crossed lovers and dreamers, there's a heaven, but for believers, there's a home. I say, baby, 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 you were, you just left me all alone. You abandoned me. I love, don't live here anymore. I'm old, I'm old, oh, oh, yeah. Oh, there's a vacancy, I'm alone. It's gone.
Song recorded during the sessions for the Rebel Yell album in 1983, but never released until now, that's Love Don't Live Here Anymore. Now, how can such a superb version of the old Rose Royce song stay on the shelf for 40 years? Here's Billy.
I didn't want to just cover a rock song everybody knew. I just thought, I was always looking for, how can I cover something people aren't expecting, but I can take the song and make it my own? And then I remember there was this Rose Royce song, and she's really like a soul singer, disco soul. It's probably late 70s. For some reason, I thought about that song, Love Don't Live Here Anymore. And I said, you know, I got Keith and Steve, and we started to make a version of it. And we'd done quite a lot of it when we discovered that Madonna was doing a version for her Like a Virgin album. So we just kind of went, wow, we don't want to do the same number at the same time, do we? And we did have a full complement of songs for Rebel Yell. We didn't need Love Don't Live Here to make up the 9 songs or whatever that it was in those days on a vinyl album. You can only really get 9 songs on where they sounded good and a certain loudness of the vinyl. So you kind of went, well, we don't want to put 10 songs. Well, maybe we'll just leave it and we'll come back to it for the next album, you know, for what was going to be Whiplash Month. But then we never came back to it. So when we start to look through the tapes of Rebel Yell for this extended version and looking for extras that were on the tapes, well, there it was, sitting there. I'd done all the vocals. Steve had done 3/4 of the guitars. It was all there. Keith had done the drum machine, programmed the drum machine, where he was a drummer, so when he programs a drum machine, it's not a Linn drum in particular. It's not like somebody just programming it. It's one of the things about hearing Love Don't Live. The whole album, Rebel Yell, was done with a Linn drum initially. And then at the sort of 11th hour before we put the album out, we got Tommy Price to come in and play drums on all the tracks, because we just knew, well, it's great with the Linn drum, but if we have a real drummer, and we're going to need someone live anyway, if we have a real drummer, it's going to just take it up to another level. But there again, when you're listening to this Love Don't Live Here Anymore, now that's Keith Falsey programming the drum machine. So you do get a bit of a vision of what the album was like before we put Tommy Price on it. And I think maybe that's true of the other extras on Rebel Yell Extended, is that you are getting a bit of a vision of what it was like before Tommy Price was put on it. I just knew I could take that chorus, and instead of how she does it, like she's very sad, you know, Rose Royce, she does it like, and Madonna, they do it like they're very sad. Well, I did it more like I'm pissed, I'm angry. I'm angry, I'm hurt. I mean, really, it's a shame we didn't put it out then, back then, because I see now how many other people have done that song. It's become like a standard. There's a million people, Patti LaBelle, there's a million people have done it. But I think when we were recording it and Madonna was doing it, hardly anybody had done it, you know.
What set up the recording of Rebel Yell was the success of the first self-titled solo Billy Idol album that had the song White Wedding.
Even in Generation X, we didn't play one style of music, you know what I mean? We did ballads, we did, you know, fast numbers, we did, you know, medium pay. We just did all different types of music. So I was going to carry that on in my solo career, but I was going to enlarge upon that because the music I'd grown up listening to in the 60s and 70s, with all the albums were really eclectic. People didn't just stick to one style of music. They did a number of styles of music. You know, think of the Stones or the Beatles or Led Zeppelin or stuff. They didn't do just one style of music. And that's kind of what you could see the Clash were doing. They weren't doing just one style of music on their albums. So there we were. And that's what you started to see on the first Billy Idol solo album, where there was songs like, you know, White Wedding, which is a rocker, but then there's It's So Cruel, a super ballad. And with Keith Falsey, I just knew his expertise at producing. I knew the same thing as Steve Stevens. I knew with this guy, I can do anything I want and he can make it work. You know? So we had this triumvirate of Billy Idol, Steve Stevens and Keith Falsey going into the second album, where we'd already made an album that had been sort of semi-successful and had breakthrough singles in Hot in the City and White Wedding. And now we were sort of, here we were in 1983, following up Billy Idol, the first solo album.
Hey little sister, what have you done? Hey little sister, who's the only one? Hey little sister, who's your Superman? Hey little sister, who's the one you want? Hey little sister, shotgun. Nice day to start again. It's a nice day for a white wedding. It's a nice day to start again. Hey little sister, who is it you're with? Hey little sister, what's your spicy wish? Hey little sister, shotgun, oh yeah. Hey little sister, who's your Superman? Hey little sister, shotgun. It's a nice day to start again. It's a nice day for a white wedding. It's a nice day to start again. Come on, it's a nice day for a
white wedding. It's a nice day to start again. Wow!
There is nothing fair in this world. There is nothing safe in this world. And there's nothing sure in this world. And there's nothing pure in this world. Look for something left in this world.
From the first Billy Idol solo album, White Wedding, which made it to number 36 on the Billboard Hot 100 in July of 1983. Now, we just heard Billy talk about the triumvirate going into the second album. Here's one of those three heads, guitar player Steve Stevens, telling you about when he first became aware of Billy Idol.
It was, going to the clubs and hearing Dancing With Myself, especially the remix version. And then we had Roxine magazine. Lisa Robinson's always had a column, and she would go over to England, and I think that was the first time I saw anything about the Sex Pistols or any of the English bands, and saw something about Generation X. And then I got the first album, I believe, on the import, because I was just such a Anglophile. I love, from the time I was probably about 12 or 13, I loved all the English bands from the glam era and the Bowie and Sweet and all that, and just kept on with it. And whatever the progression was in the UK, I just followed along. And Generation X was certainly part of that.
Steve takes us back to 1983's tour behind the first solo album and the recording of the Rebel Yell album.
You know, the last track we recorded for the first album was White Wedding, so that was the bar being raised for Rebel Yell. Keith actually played drums on White Wedding. He didn't want to be credited. I'm a producer, I'm not a drummer. Yeah, but you're an amazing drummer, you gotta, And I think, we went in, we had come off the road and touring the first album, and we went into rehearsals, and it was a pretty natural process, we record everything on a boombox, and just some ideas were jammed. I remember we had things like half of Flesh for Fantasy, a bit of Eyes Without a Face, a groove from Rebel Yell, and then when we got in the studio, we'd set up a Linn drum, and Keith would just stick us in the room with that, set up a beat. we could speed it up or slow it down, depending. It was always the same beat, but we write to it. And I know lyrically, Billy probably told you about his Rolling Stones, Ronnie Wood's birthday party. So he had the title, and we had some chords, basically three chords, and off we went.
Last night a little dancer came dancing to my door. Last night a little angel came pumping on the floor. She said, come baby, got a license for love, and if it expires, pray help from above. Because in the midnight hour she's crying to me.
Mom.
From the 40th anniversary deluxe version of Rebel Yell, that's the title piece, Rebel Yell. So what do you think inspired that song's title? Here's Billy.
Ronnie Wood from the Stones. He was living on the up in the upper 70s, the west side in Manhattan. I was living, first month or so, I lived on 71st and Riverside, and then I moved downtown after that. Ronnie was living up just above me. He had a brownstone. So I knew Ronnie, and Ronnie was putting on a party for one of the Stones, and I can't remember whose birthday it was. At one point of the night, there was Mick Jagger, Ronnie Wood, and Keith Richards standing in front of me, all drinking this big bottle, this dark bottle something, which I started to sort of follow the label up to their mouths. As they were putting it up to their mouths, I followed the label, and I could see, oh, this stuff, it's got some sort of cavalry officer on it, who's kind of riding away in a charge, and he's got like, oh, it's like a Confederate cavalry officer. Oh, he's got like a plume in his hat, like a cavalier, you know. Oh, it's like Jeb Stuart or something. And I started to see the title and went, oh, it's called Rebel Yell. And I knew a little bit about the American Civil War. I was kind of into history. And I love American and British history, you know. And so I knew what the Rebel Yell was. But I thought, that could be a great title, you know, because I was looking for titles, you know. I needed titles for songs, and always it helps to have a great title. I thought that Rebel Yell, I could use that. I said, yeah, really, Rebel Yell, you're not thinking of using that as a song title, are you? And before they could say anything, I said, you know, Street Fighting Man, Jumping Jack Flash, Rebel Yell, does it sound like a Stones title? And they looked at each other and they kind of went, no, I don't think we would use that. And then I immediately thought, oh, fantastic, I could take that. I won't make it anything to do with the Civil War. I'll make it about a female orgasmic cry of love as we're orgasming, you know, in sex or something. I make it all about Perry, really, in a way. It was my song for Perry, in a way, that she's the dancer. Last night, the little dancer came dancing to my door. I think she's the dancer, really. So it was a bit of a song about her, because she'd come over to America and had joined me in New York. And it was really just about that. It was really about how fantastic I thought women were, and how powerful they were, and how exciting. And so it was my kind of anthem for women in a way.
One of the most haunting songs on Rebel Yell is Eyes Without a Face.
Yes, I was deliberately trying to write not a love song, really, you know, not an obvious love song, because there were so many songs like that in the 80s. They were just these obvious love songs. I thought, well, what about the other side of it, you know, something's, you're breaking up or something, and it's this kind of almost murdering love kind of thing. I was really just looking for, you know, right, just trying to write a different kind of song, really. Well, I knew about this movie, this French New Wave movie, The Eyes Without a Face, Les Yeux Sans Visage, and it was about a plastic surgeon whose wife has had a terrible car accident, and she's lost the features on her face, and he's kidnapping other women and using their skin from their faces to graft onto his wife. Now, my song has nothing to do with the movie, but I just thought, I was always looking for titles, because once you've got a title to a song, it really spurs a lot of, you know, does a lot of the work for you in terms of coming up with the lyrics and stuff, because it just suggests so much. And something about that title, The Eyes Without a Face, it just suggested to me, oh, I could use that imagery as this love affair that was going wrong or something. was this kind of, you know, a tune that stepped up, you know, da-da-da-da-da, just went straight up the scale. And I was kind of interested in things like that, a tune that just went straight up the scale and making that work. Anyway, I had basically started to have a bit of the tune for the verse, and I was going to rehearsal, and I just sort of had that title, and as I walked to the rehearsal, I hummed the tune in my mind and sang Eyes Without a Face in my head. And then when I got with Steve, we started to really write the song, you know, and it came out fantastic, and it was like the biggest hit on Rebel Yell. I think it got to number four in the charts, because at one point we had the Eyes Without a Face at number four and the album at number six.
I'm all out of hope. One more bad break could bring a fall. When I'm far from home, don't call me on the phone to tell me your love. It's easy to deceive. Eyes without a face. Eyes without a face. Got no human grace. Your eyes without a face.
from the newly dropped 40th anniversary deluxe version of Billy Idol's Rebel Yell, Eyes Without a Face. To add fuel to the bonfire of Billy Idol's career, a new cable television network was becoming the thing for music fans of the 80s, MTV.
Initially, when I come to America, you know, the people who were cool kind of knew who I was, but, you know, the general public had no idea. So it was really great because, like, the music people knew, the people at the clubs knew. But, yeah, you could walk around the street, no one, most people didn't give a shit, you know. Although one day I was getting some bedding for my apartment, and it started to pour with rain in New York. And I had this bedding in, you know, for sheets, really was, in a brown paper bag. And I was trying to see if I could get a cab. Of course, in New York, when it rains, you can't get a cab. But I didn't know that. So I got absolutely soaked trying to walk back to my apartment. So I went into this health food restaurant. There was no one in there. And just sat down. I suppose I got a drink or something just to wait for the rain. Because I was soaked. I looked like, you know, I was like a rat. I was drowned. And then suddenly this man and his daughter came in, walked right up to me, and he went, "You're Billy Idol, aren't you?" And I couldn't believe they could recognize me. But I kind of went, well, this guy, they were from England. At the same time, it was one of those things where you go, well, there you go, you know. And what sort of happened once I was on MTV, yeah, of course, you know, then you've got a TV audience. This isn't a music audience. I mean, yeah, it's your young people who are into music watching it, but, you know, the mums and dads are watching it. And MTV started to be everywhere on, like, TVs in bars and everywhere, your clubs. So, yeah, it started to get where, wow, if I was walking around New York, I'm getting a million people going, "Hey, yo, Billy Idol!" You know, I'm just getting all that all day long, let alone the drug dealers in Washington Square would be calling, "Oh, I got that moaning, moaning marijuana. I got that white wedding crack." As I was walking through Washington Square Park, you know. So, yeah, I was like super. And of course, I walked around in all the gear all the time because that's all the clothes I had, really. You know, that's any of the hair done because I was living it. You know, I was living it 24/7. This is what I've dreamed of, really, of being in a group, making music, coming to America. And there, I'd already had Hot in the City, had been a minor hit, I suppose. Just got into the top 20, I think. White Wedding had done well on MTV and in the clubs and on the radio and everything. So I'd had kind of hits and stuff. So I was starting to get well known. And it was a bit of a shock, the difference between being cool and the club people knowing you and other musicians. And then suddenly this television audience knowing you was completely different. It's like a whole different world. It just got more and more intense as the 80s went on, you know, because the more people saw you, the more they could recognize me by my voice or just my lips. One day I was in a McDonald's with my son in the early 90s, and those lips, you're Billy Idol, you know, so.
So, my good friend, it's who put your hands. I go up to the stratosphere. Why do I miss you? Why do
Highway from the 40th anniversary deluxe version of Rebel Yell.
Hi, I'm Steve Stevens. You'll hear more of Rebel Yell at 40 from Billy Idol and myself on All Access after this quick tune-up.